leaders have been beaten, shot at, tortured, and even executed by shrimp farm workers. In 1997, after two fishermen were killed by shrimp farm guards, in Honduras, Jorge Varela, the head of a Honduran mangrove defense organization, wrote these words. Today, the artisanal fishermen cannot move freely across the swamps and mangroves where before they found their livelihood, for the camaroneros, or shrimp farmers, have appropriated not only the land concessions granted to them by the government, but also the surrounding areas. With the complicity of our government, we have given away our people's patrimony to a few national and foreign individuals, and we have deprived thousands of persons of their livelihood. We have turned the blood of our people into an appetizer. This book is about mangroves, but it is not possible to write about mangroves without also writing about the aquaculture industry, and especially shrimp farming, the single biggest destroyer of mangrove forests in the world. Were it simply a question of competing land use, forests versus aquafarms, perhaps it would be possible to shrug, lament the price of progress, and move on to other topics. But a great injustice has been done to the people who inhabit these forests and rely on them for sustenance and income. The industrial farming of shrimp on mangrove shorelines is not just an act of ecological piracy, but one of social destruction as well. So while this book is about the magic and mystique and magnificence of mangroves, it is also a book about the catastrophic loss of these forests and the damage done to the communities that rely on them. To the people of the mangroves, Los Pueblos del Manglar, I dedicate these pages. Kennedy Warren, Auckland, New Zealand. Introduction. We suppose it is the foul odor and the impenetrable quality of the mangrove roots which gives one a feeling of dislike for these saltwater-eating bushes. We sat quietly and watched the moving life in the forests of the roots, and it seemed to us that there was stealthy murder everywhere. On the surf-swept rocks, it was a fierce and hungry and joyous killing, committed with energy and ferocity. But here it was like stalking, quiet murder. The roots gave off clicking sounds, and the odor was disgusting. We felt that we were watching something horrible. No one likes the mangroves. Raul said that in La Paz, no one loved them at all. John Steinbeck, The Log from the Sea of Cortez. By Steinbeck's accounting, Whedon Island, in Florida's Tampa Bay, might once have been one of the foulest places on earth. An apparent wasteland in which nothing but mangroves grew, it resisted improvement. But in the bustling optimism of post-World War II America, no land or person was beyond redemption. A rehabilitative program was undertaken. Whedon Island was sliced up as part of a statewide mosquito eradication effort. Trenches were dug to improve the flow of water from the bay through the mangroves, giving fish better access to the wetland. The more fish there were, the more mosquito larvae they would eat. In a 1958 photo, the island looks like a checkerboard, with each line a saltwater ditch. But like so many ideas that involve human alteration of the landscape, there were unintended consequences, and for mangroves, they were all negative. The spoil from the ditches was simply mounded alongside them, creating a network of dikes that were a few feet higher than the surrounding ground. Since the tide never covered these mounds, they were colonized by invasive species, such as Brazilian pepper and casuarina pine, which subsequently spread through the wetland. The dikes and ditches also interfered with the natural surface flow of water, the slow percolative trickling across the sediment that is the mangrove swamp's circulation system. An estimated 14% of Tampa Bay's wetlands died as a result of these earthworks. Grand wetland improvement schemes also left their mark on other parts of Florida. In the 1960s, canals were dug and roads constructed